Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Legalized marijuana is always a very difficult question.
The time is long overdue for us to remove the federal prohibition on marijuana.
From now on, I smoke weed exclusively with white people.
Well, I'm getting high next time.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man, the Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
There's definitely cannabis in there, and it makes sure that I can sleep now.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Don't piss off your old dealer.
Marijuana is not the kind of thing that ought to be legalized.
I know you're not supposed to admit that you smoke pot, but I don't drink alcohol.
Let's get out of here. I have some really good weed back at the hotel.
I used to smoke marijuana.
I don't care if an adult wants to smoke marijuana. They shouldn't go to prison for it either.
Oh, that's a lie. You don't believe that, Kevin Sabat. Not for a second. Welcome back, everybody. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, live and direct from beautiful legal Potland, Oregon, here at Delta 9 House and Studios. And I made some updates to the Delta 9 House website today. If you check out facebook.com/Delta 9 House. I've entered all of the upcoming events this summer in the city of Portland. The Waterfront Blues Festival, the Portland Rose Festival, Fleet Week, the Eclipse. You know we're having an eclipse this year, don't you? Yeah, August 21st, there is a total eclipse of the sun happening, and it first happens here in Oregon. Just a little bit north of Newport, on the Oregon coast, there will be the beginning of a total eclipse of the sun, and it goes all the way across most of central Oregon and then heads across the rest of the United States. But like just north of Newport, Oregon is the very first place the shadow will touch the North American continent on August 21st. Now, I won't be down there because I'll be up here in Portland, and from Portland, it'll be a partial eclipse. You'll be able to have just the partial eclipse. And so if you want to get a room here at Delta 9, you want to book it real quick because those summertime events are going to fill up fast. All right, I've got some news for you. A couple of stories today coming out of New Orleans, and big thanks to one of my listeners for sending me the tips on this. And by the way, if you've got local news tips having to do with marijuana, feel free to send them my way by email. I'm RadicalRuss@gmail.com. And the listener today sent me these two stories coming out of New Orleans area in Louisiana involving high-speed chases by the police. Let's go to the video here because this is a video from one of the local news stations. And if you look in the top left corner of the frame, you can see this SUV is rolled over. I had rolled over and wrecked through this intersection. And here's the police spokesperson talking to the local news station.
Santa Police Department. We're out here at Martin Luther King and South Jeff in New Orleans. What happened early this morning, our narcotics team began an investigation after we were contacted by a company, a repossession company of ours, and they found between a pound and 2 pounds of marijuana inside the vehicle. During that time, we learned the suspect was en route to pick up his vehicle, along likely with the drugs. We attempted to do a controlled delivery. Also tried to stop him, at which time he fled, led the officers on a vehicle pursuit into New Orleans, where he crashed here in South Jeff Davis and Martin Luther King.
All right, so we've got this, this crash that happens, okay? So this officer is talking about a rollover crash that happened because there was a call from a repo shop, and the repo shop had repossessed this SUV, and they found weed in it. Now, when they found the weed in this SUV, about a pound to a pound and a half, maybe 2 pounds of weed that they found in this SUV, they wait for the guy to show up to pick up his car from the impound lot, right? And when they do, they try to stop him, and he takes off. So they engage in a high-speed chase through three cities in the New Orleans area, two of the suburbs, then into New Orleans, at a high rate of speed, according to the report. And, this went all the way down I-10, and the chase ended when the suspect's vehicle flipped, crashed on MLK Boulevard in New Orleans. So they're telling us they felt the need to engage in a high-speed chase, endangering traffic, endangering pedestrians, driving this guy into the city to where he rolls his SUV in the middle of the city, which could have, again, killed pedestrians, could have killed bystanders, because it was absolutely critical we get that pound of weed off the streets of New Orleans. Because, my gosh, if that guy had gotten away with having a pound of weed, he might have sold it to some people who then might have smoked it. And then, you know, what? Then what? That's the thing. What are you trying to save us from? The chase you took this guy on was far more dangerous to the people of Louisiana than the weed he had in the car. This is, now, that alone, you know, what, that story alone would be enough to kind of set me off. But then the listener sends me another story from the same day. This was deputies in Jefferson Parish who shoot a suspect, and then the high-speed chase ends in another crash. This one involved narcotics deputies, narcotics investigators, who were following a guy who they believed to be a dealer, and the 27-year-old guy. They were conducting the narcotics investigation. They observed two vehicles, a black Honda and another car, and the driver of the black Honda appeared to be holding a weapon. As soon as he saw the cops, that's when, and the two cars were next to each other doing a deal, right? Now, they haven't said what the drugs were. My belief, it's probably weed, but could be other drugs. But they're trying to do a little parking lot weed deal kind of thing. He sees the cops. The guy puts the Honda into reverse. In doing so, backs into another car that had some people into it. The two deputies felt threatened. You know how cops feel threatened anytime somebody, you know, moves or acts, right? Doesn't say how close the car was to the deputies. Doesn't say that the guy was trying to run the deputies over. Anything like that. But they felt threatened, as cops do, and fired several times at the driver. It was not clear whether both officers' bullets hit Jackson. Oh, good. So we got two cops firing their weapons in public, and we don't know where all the bullets went. But a couple hit this guy in the arm and the shoulder. He takes off and speeds away from the stop. They spot the black Honda later after it had caught fire after it had crashed into a canal. So, okay. Cops say the guy has a gun, and the guy speeds away from him, backs up and speeds away from them. And so once again, we have a situation where if those guys were able to go into a store and buy their weed, we wouldn't have another high-speed incident. We wouldn't have another set of bullets flying through the public to deal with this situation. I just hate it that when people read these stories in Louisiana, some of them are going to say, see, drugs, it all leads to violence. It all leads to violence and crime. No, the prohibition is leading to the violence here. You don't see these people involved in high-speed chases over a guy that had two cases of beer in his car. Why? Because the cops don't need to stop him if he's got two cases of beer in his car. They just let him go on his merry way. But oh, if we know he's got a pound of weed in there, you have to stop them at all costs, even if that means driving the suspect in a high-speed chase through a busy city and rolling his SUV where he could kill all sorts of pedestrians in a tourist town.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, The Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
I don't know what I'm doing.
This doesn't feel right.
Does that feel right?
It never really has.
It really has.
I'm still doing it.
I didn't know
it would be this way.
But now.
Now.
I know.
I know.
This has been the Russ Belville Show's anti-drug public service announcement of the day, exclusively on RadicalRuss.com.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Okay, maybe you're high too. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they aim you to say that.
Cool.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here? This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 11 after the hour. And if you've been following this show for a while, you know that there's something we've discovered. Yes, there's something we've discovered. Voters are idiots. Yeah, voters are idiots. I bet you didn't know this. Yeah, according to some of our state legislatures, when the voters get together and they pass an initiative to legalize something or regulate something, we don't need to pay attention to them. What do they know? They're a bunch of idiots. What do they think they're doing writing initiatives and getting them on the ballot and having majorities pass them? As if the people have any clue as to how to govern themselves. Why can't they just accede to the will of our so altruistic and brilliant and wise legislators? Why do they keep insisting on passing their own laws when you know that we're just going to ignore them? Yeah, the latest example of this, right here in my state of Oregon. The report on the Oregonian says there's a bill to shift marijuana taxes from the school fund to mental health and addiction services. Now, we passed Measure 91, and we passed it with the largest majority in any midterm election, 56%. So this wasn't like, you know, a squeaker. Pretty big support there. And when we passed it, we said that there was going to be a tax by weight, right? We're going to charge X percent, X number per ounce or whatever. And we said that the cities, if they wanted to ban marijuana industries, had to have a vote of the people. And we said that the tax money that was raised would go to specific causes. 40% would go to the schools, the common fund. 20% would go to mental health, alcoholism, and drug services. 15% would go to Oregon State Police, 10% would go to city law enforcement, 10% would go to county law enforcement, and 5% would go to the Oregon Health Authority for alcohol and drug abuse prevention, early intervention, and treatment services. Well, what the hell did we know? Obviously, we're idiots, right? Because one of the first things they did, the legislature went and changed the tax structure. Nope, we're not going to tax it by the ounce. We're not going to tax it by weight. We're going to tax it 17% of the price plus another 3% for the localities to make some money on. So we're going to have a 20% tax. Yeah, we know that's not what you guys voted for. But again, you voters are idiots. So the legislature had to fix it for you. Another thing, we voters were idiots in Oregon by thinking that the cities that want to ban marijuana ought to have the people vote on that. Like the entire state of Oregon voted on this. And the entire state of Oregon, by a majority, said that there is a right for people to be able to get licenses and run marijuana businesses. However, we're not going to, as the entire state of Oregon, we're not going to force this on some local small town that might not want it. So if the local small town wants to vote to say there's no marijuana licenses, that's fine. We'll let you do that. That's what we, the people, decided. Of course, we, the people, are idiots because the legislature went and changed that too. They said you shouldn't have to, you shouldn't make these local places have to vote to ban weed. Most of these local places already voted against legalization. That was really their rationale. Their rationale was, well, our locality didn't vote for the statewide initiative. We shouldn't have to follow it. Well, isn't that nice? Yeah, I all sorts of things that are statewide that I'd like to not follow because my locality doesn't like it. Yeah, their argument was, we just had an election and the people of our county or the people of our city voted against it. So why should we have to have another election to vote against marijuana licenses? I'll tell you why. Because you didn't just vote on marijuana licenses in the state election. You voted on marijuana legalization. And now the question is a different question to be asked. The question in 2014 that went before the voters was in the context of the fact that marijuana is prohibited. Marijuana is illegal. Illegal marijuana sales are going on. Marijuana is a crime. Commerce in it is a crime. Should that no longer be a crime? And the people of Oregon voted yes. In 2014, when the people of some local city saw that initiative, the initiative wasn't, should there be pot shops in our city? The initiative was, should there be regulation of marijuana? The choice then was vote for marijuana legalization so that there could be some sort of commercial entity set up, or vote against it and have no commercial entity set up and let the criminals continue to run the marijuana market. But now the question's different. Now that legalization exists, the question for the small town isn't whether or not there should be legalization. The question is whether or not the criminals should keep control of the marijuana markets, or should we turn it over to the law-abiding citizens? It's a different vote. If I'm some conservative in a small town that hates pot, the 2014 vote, I might vote against it, saying, all right, I hate pot, I don't want it legal, I'm voting against it. But after it passes, after it passed, it gave every Oregonian above the age of 21 years old, or 21 or older, to be able to possess marijuana and cultivate their own plants. So now the question is not, should it be legal to have pot shops? Now the question is, should we have pot shops, or should we let all of these people who can grow marijuana legally take care of supplying everybody? If I'm that conservative who hates pot, my choice now is, should I get revenue, tax revenue for my city over it? Not whether or not it should exist, because now legalization exists. Now anybody can cultivate four plants in their home. Now the question is whether or not those people continue to thrive on an underground economy, or whether their locality starts to get some tax revenue from licensed businesses. And now this latest bill from Senator Cruz, who, by the way, has always hated marijuana. Senator Cruz wants to redirect money that's going to the common school fund and instead put it into drug addiction and mental health. Cruz said, quote, quite honestly, there is a nexus between marijuana and drug addiction and mental health. Services at the local level are woefully underfunded. This seemed like an ideal place to spend the money, end quote. Okay, here's another example of a senator who buys hook, line, and sinker the idea that marijuana is a gateway drug. There is no nexus between marijuana and drug addiction. There's a nexus between drugs and drug addiction. And this idea that we're going to take marijuana tax money and spend it on mental health and addiction treatment is saying that the people who are using cannabis and buying cannabis are the ones who are on the hook for treating the people with heroin problems. We have to spend our money treating the people with meth or coke problems or alcoholism.
What is the main food that penguins eat?
Spam?
It's just ridiculous to me. Anyway, it's 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone. Time for us to take our union-mandated safety briefing. And when we return, a great piece in TheRoot.com on 7 reasons why Black America should fight marijuana prohibition. New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they aim you to say that.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. Pod 2.0. It's not your father's Woodstock weed. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 21 and a half after the hour, and we're looking at a piece on TheRoot.com. Michael Harriet has written it. It's called 7 Reasons Why Black America Should Fight Marijuana Prohibition. I am so glad to see this article. I was Normal's National Outreach Coordinator from 2008 to 2012. And one of the frustrating aspects of that job was learning, you know, just how racist marijuana prohibition is, right? And it's, you know, something I had to learn because, you know, frankly, I am a tall, able-bodied, cisgendered, heterosexual, white, American male, middle class, middle-aged. Hell, I'm like 9 out of 10 on the privilege checklist. I'm like the gold medal winner in the privilege decathlon. So it's taken a long time not too long a time, but back in the day, it took me a while to recognize just how racist marijuana prohibition is. And as outreach coordinator, it always frustrated me because I'm looking around at Normal chapters and at hemp fests and all of these marijuana related events, and I could count the number of black folks I'd see on one hand. It was very frustrating. I'm like, all these white folks are out here trying to change marijuana laws, but we're not the ones that need those laws changed. By and large, we're not busted as often or as harshly as blacks and Latinos are. So where are they? Where are the blacks and Latinos in the marijuana movement? Well, it took me a long time to understand some of the dynamics behind that. You got the problem of the black church and the Catholic church when it comes to Latinos being strongly anti-drug. You've got the problem of black families mistaking the violence inherent in prohibition for it being inherent in the drugs themselves. And you've got just the natural factor of when you're a minority male in America, you've already got a target on your back. You know, just by being a black guy, you got a target on your back. And who wants to raise your profile and become a bigger target by saying you're the black guy who supports weed? So these are some legit reasons and some understanding as to why there has been a reticence of people by people in these minority communities to get involved in their own liberation, the issue of drug prohibition that affects them so much more disproportionately. That is beginning to change. We're seeing the Minority Cannabis Business Association. We're seeing more minorities in positions of power rising through the ranks of marijuana advocacy and in the marijuana industry. There are still a lot of hurdles to overcome. We still have our marijuana laws being written in such a way as to exclude minorities from participation. Little things like saying people with prior drug convictions can't get a license. Well, guess who got most of the prior drug convictions? Again, people of color. So it is with great joy that I see this piece come up in The Root, TheRoot.com, 7 reasons why Black America should fight marijuana prohibition. Here they are. Number 1, marijuana prohibition was always racist. During alcohol prohibition in the 1920s, marijuana became the drug of choice, especially in the early jazz clubs where black and white citizens commingled. Then came Harry Anslinger, the head of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, which would eventually become the DEA. In the 1930s, Anslinger used racism to promote the first ban on marijuana, writing, quote, "Reefer makes darkies think they're as good as white men," end quote. And most famously, quote, "There are 100,000 total marijuana smokers in the U.S., and most are Negroes, Hispanics, Filipinos, and entertainers. Their satanic music, jazz, and swing result from marijuana use. This marijuana causes white women to seek sexual relations with Negroes, entertainers, and any others," end quote. Now, you gotta admire just what a great job prohibition has done when we've gone from 100,000 total marijuana smokers in the U.S. in 1937 to 30 million of them 80 years later. What a great job prohibition has done. And this idea, the white women are seeking out sexual relations with the Negroes, entertainers, and any others because of weed? Yeah, okay. Somebody's got a complex. Anyway, this piece continues. In 1937, Anslinger convinced Congress to pass the Marijuana Tax Act, prohibiting marijuana and officially beginning the war on drugs. This war escalated when President Richard Nixon used drug laws to target and silence blacks and anti-war protesters. Harper's Magazine recently unearthed a 22-year-old interview with former Nixon aide John Ehrlichman, who revealed, quote, "The Nixon campaign in 1968 and the Nixon White House after that had two enemies, the anti-war left and black people. You understand what I'm saying? We knew we couldn't make it illegal to be either against the war or black, but by getting the public to associate the hippies with marijuana and the blacks with heroin, and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities. We could arrest their leaders, raid their homes, break up their meetings, and vilify them night after night on the evening news. Did we know we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did." End quote. Number two, we could use the money. Because the black unemployment rate is usually twice the rate for whites. Because even when the income level and tax base is the same, the more black students a school has, the less funding it will receive. Think about what a company with $1 billion in revenue could do for employment. Imagine what an extra $200 million could do for school funding, scholarships, and community programs, not to mention the exorbitant amounts of money communities spend enforcing, prosecuting, and incarcerating people for weed. Number three, fewer black people will end up in jail. Well, that's good news for sure. Blacks use marijuana at about the same rate as white folks do, but they are 3.73 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana, according to the American Civil Liberties Union. Four times, almost four times more likely to be arrested just for being black. That's another reason why we need to end the prohibition on marijuana. Number four, police will kill fewer black people. Or at least we hope they will. Police are more likely to use force against African Americans because they are more likely to stop or detain them. Maybe it's time to take marijuana off the table simply because it unnecessarily puts people of color into danger. Take the case of Chad Robertson, who tried to flee police because he had a small amount of marijuana in his pocket, and they shot him in the back. 24-year-old DeAndre Phillips ended up dead after an encounter with a plainclothes cop who said he smelled marijuana coming from this car. Pot is often a contributing factor to police brutality because it gives officers the freedom to detain and arrest and search people based on nothing but suspicion. Now, speaking of stop and frisk, number five, stop and frisk is a marijuana arrest tool. The policy was never about guns or safety. An analysis of the New York City Police Department's 2012 data revealed that cops used stop and frisk to recover 729 guns, but stopped 26,000 people and arrested 5,000 people for marijuana possession. Blacks and Latinos were more likely to be stopped than whites, but less likely to be found with a weapon or drugs. Since a court ruled stop and frisk unconstitutional, the NYPD has replaced it with ramped up marijuana arrests specifically targeting minorities. Also, it criminalizes black kids. By 12th grade, both white and black juveniles were found to have used marijuana at the same rate, but underage black children were arrested for it at higher rates than their white counterparts. Even though pot is illegal everywhere for juveniles, if your children were going to buy weed, would you rather have them purchase it from a drug dealer or from a legal dispensary? And finally, number 7, the long-term effects are dire. We've shown how marijuana laws are enforced unequally, but what are the effects of such disparities in enforcement? If black children are arrested more often for marijuana, the long-term effects can be dire. A drug conviction could render a student ineligible for financial aid and could pop up during employee background checks, eliminating opportunities for employment. The disparity in sentencing affects the families of the people convicted, increases the number of parents taken away from their children, and trickles down into poverty and unemployment rates. Legalizing pot is not just a hot-button political topic. It is the first step in dismantling the war on drugs that has wreaked havoc on the black community for 80 years. Marijuana prohibition affects more than the people who partake of the substance. It is a critical issue that touches the lives of everyone in black America. Plus, when weed becomes a legal drug and Snoop Dogg becomes to marijuana what Colonel Sanders is to chicken, the Super Bowl commercials are going to be lit. That's great. All right, that's Michael Harriet, writes at theroot.com. And I would go even further on this and talk about how you cannot end the disproportionate nature of our criminal justice system toward black people. You cannot end racism in America in general until we end the war on drugs. Now, that's not to say ending the war on drugs ends racism. It is to say you can't end racism without ending this war on drugs, a primary tool for enforcing this racism. It's a tool of enforcement. It always has been. Our country was founded by slave-owning forefathers. Our Second Amendment was created so the slave patrols could keep the blacks in their place, to keep them from rebelling. And after slavery ended, the control was then passed on to Jim Crow laws and poll taxes and all sorts of ways to keep black people down. And as the civil rights era began, a new method was needed to be able to keep those people down. And that's what the war on drugs is serving as. Another enforcement mechanism of white superiority. Another enforcement mechanism of the white male patriarchy that keeps people down. It's time for us to end this war on drugs and to take the positive step forward as a people, as a nation, and recognize that all people have the right inherent in their creation, an inalienable right to the pursuit of happiness, an inalienable right to privacy, an inalienable right to their own cognitive liberty, to believe as they see fit. All of those rights taken in whole guarantee us that we have the right to do with our brains and our bodies what we choose. We have the right to cultivate any crops on our property, on our land, that we desire. And no government, no law enforcement has the authority to tell us otherwise. I'm not looking for some new right to be recognized. I'm looking for our existing rights to be recognized. We have had our hemp heritage stolen from us. We are a nation built by hemp farmers. We are a nation that thrived because of hemp. And we are a nation that's supposed to stand for freedom. And if freedom doesn't mean the right to do with your mind and body what you choose, then it's not freedom. We are the nation that's supposed to exemplify this idea of freedom. And in a free society, all things should be legal until they're proven harmful, not the other way around. That's the way tyrannies work. All things are restricted and prohibited until they are approved. That's the way of tyranny. The way of freedom, all things are allowed until they're proven harmful. And there ain't no way they're going to prove marijuana is harmful enough to be banned in the context of a country that allows alcohol and tobacco. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to discuss the science of marijuana DUIs right here on the Russ Belville Show.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Get your tickets now for the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference, happening one day only in Eugene, Oregon on Friday, April 28th. You'll learn all about the latest OLCC regulations for adult use cannabis, including testing requirements, tech and branding, taxes and distribution, and the latest developments in medical marijuana regulations. OMBC features networking with Oregon's leading experts in marijuana, including State Senator Floyd Prezansky. You'll also get to hear from author, actor, and punk rock icon Henry Rollins delivering the keynote address. Early bird pricing is available for conference only and VIP passes, which gets you access to the VIP networking events featuring Henry Rollins and other speakers. It's the 2017 Oregon Marijuana Business Conference. Tickets available now at OregonMBC.com. That's OregonMBC.com before April 14th to get your early bird pricing. OregonMBC.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
They will smoke weed and sell pot at state fairs.
All right, maybe you're high, too. Good for you.
Midnight, July 1st, 2015, adult marijuana prohibition came to an end in Oregon. Immediately, over 400,000 adults who consume cannabis responsibly were no longer criminals. This is what freedom sounds like. Brought to you by Portland Normal.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. In this segment, we take a look, another look, at the science of marijuana DUI, and we're prompted by a report in the Reno Gazette Journal at rgj.com. Jenny Kane has written this piece, "The Problem with America's Marijuana DUI Laws, Science." So this goes into detail. It's about the state of Nevada, and it's important to understand that the state of Nevada has the most stringent marijuana DUI law of any of the legal states. It mandates that anybody at 2 nanograms of marijuana metabolite in their system or greater is guilty of a DUI per se. Regardless if they're impaired or not, they're just guilty. And they begin the piece by talking about a man who talks about rolling fat blunts at Lake Tahoe. And he says, quote, "Yeah, I roll my blunts while I'm driving. I smoke while I'm driving. I don't get high after 2 blunts. I just get tired and lazy." And of course, that's the opening for this discussion about marijuana DUID. There is the 5 nanogram standard in Washington. That's a per se standard. In Colorado, there's a 5 nanogram standard that's a rebuttable inference, a presumptive inference. It basically means that we assume you're too high to drive, but you can argue against it. Whereas Washington's per se says you're too high to drive, no arguments. But Nevada's limit's even lower. It's even lower than the federal standard for the Department of Transportation employees. So Nevada's really strict on this thing. But the piece goes into detail discussing how no accurate tests exist for discovering the marijuana in someone's system. There's no breathalyzer test for real-time results. They have to go to either blood, urine, or saliva tests that are imperfect and take some time. And the piece points out that there's no scientific evidence that tells us a specific amount of marijuana in a person's system means that they're impaired. Now, this is not uncommon, folks. In fact, in this piece, they talk about how alcohol is the only drug out there that has a reliable testing limit. You don't hear a lot of these legislators who are so concerned about the marijuana DUIs bringing up the fact that we don't have a limit for oxycodone. We don't have a limit for hydrocodone. We don't have a limit for barbiturates, for Xanax, for benzodiazepines. Almost every other drug out there is like marijuana in the sense that you cannot determine a specific level of that drug in someone's system means that they're impaired. You cannot determine that. Only alcohol works this way. And that's the problem, is we got everybody so enamored of this alcohol standard. We got all these prosecutors that are so happy about it because they don't have to prove anything. All a prosecutor has to do in a DUI case is bring up that blood alcohol test, that breathalyzer test that says, you're over 0.08. We don't have to prove the guy was driving well, that he was at fault, that there was any problems, that he was doing okay. None of that. 0.08, you're guilty. Bam. Go to jail. And so they want that same sort of thing for marijuana. And it's partially our fault because we kept saying treat marijuana like alcohol. And so they're like, okay, where's the marijuana breathalyzer? But marijuana can have a breathalyzer, just like all these other drugs. So why isn't there a huge concern among law enforcement? Why are they not lobbying state legislatures to create limits for oxycodone, to create limits for benzodiazepines, to create limits for all these other drugs that are far more impairing than cannabis could ever be? Why are they not scared of those? Because of morality, folks. Because people that use marijuana are bad people. People that use marijuana are bad people who break the law in some states. And bad people, we got to watch out for bad people because they're the irresponsible pothead losers that are going to get behind the wheel and wreck and kill people. But Bob, the construction worker who's on 6 Vicodin a day, don't worry about Bob. He's fine. He's one of the good ones. He's a good guy who obeys the law and takes the respectable drugs. That's what this is all about. It's pure prejudice. The same exact issue that exists with the inability to determine whether someone's impaired on marijuana exists for oxycodone, but nobody gives a shit about that. In fact, you look at those drugs, you get yourself a bottle of Oxy, you get yourself a bottle of Vicodin, you get your Xanax or any of those things, and you read that long old fold-out label, and you'll find a disclaimer in there. You'll find a warning, something along the lines of, until you know how OxyContin may affect you, do not drive or operate heavy machinery. Now, the flip side of that would be, once you do know how oxycodone may affect you, get behind the wheel. Have a good time. Because it's recognized that people on these pharmaceutical drugs develop tolerance, and that people who are on a long-term pain regimen will develop a tolerance to opioids that allows them to behave in a completely unimpaired manner. There are people out there who are on, like my dad, who's on like 6 Vicodin a day, and he's perfectly coherent and alert and sharp, right? No problems, because he's developed that tolerance to it. You put 6 Vicodin into me, hell, I might overdose on that. That might put me in the hospital because I've got no opiate tolerance. You give me 1 Vicodin, I'm probably too messed up to drive. But my dad can drive an RV. He's fine. And they refuse. They just steadfastly refuse to accept that same concept for marijuana. But the same concept exists. I can smoke joints all day long. I can smoke joints while I'm driving a car, and you will find me to be a far better driver than half the drivers out there on the road, because I've got the tolerance. It doesn't affect me. I can compensate. But you put one of my joints into a newbie from Oklahoma and put him behind the wheel, and that guy is going to wreck and kill somebody. Well, probably not. He's probably going to go 20 miles an hour and, you know, miss his exit. But still, you get my point? My point here is that they cannot wrap their minds around the idea that someone could be a long-term user of opiates and be fine to drive. They cannot apply that to someone who's a long-term user of cannabis who would be fine to drive. And the other thing that's really annoying about this is when they start pointing out some of the examples. There's a couple examples in this piece where they talk about how Nevada has a terrible history with DUIs. And they point out the case in 2004. Anna Marie Jackson was convicted of having marijuana in her system when she pulled in front of a motorcycle officer, causing the death of 55-year-old officer Mike Schofield. Last year, the jury found her, or I'm sorry, she was found guilty of having marijuana in her system. And again, the marijuana in her system was 2 nanograms or more. But the other case they talk about, 25-year-old Nicole Cote, 2 counts of DUI and 2 counts of reckless driving. She was going 60 when she rammed into a vehicle that hurt 2 young men. And she was found to have 6 nanograms of marijuana in her system. A whole 6. And then in March of this year, Mario Cortez was sentenced to 40 years in prison after he killed a couple while driving, and he had 10 nanograms in his system. Killed a couple in their 70s. And so they use these stories. They bring these 3 stories up of these people. Oh my God, they were DUI. They had these small amounts of marijuana in their system. They killed or seriously maimed people. But you know what else they found in the systems of these people? Try and guess, folks. Did you say alcohol? Yes, that's right. Cote, the one who got the 2 counts of DUI and reckless driving, she had a 0.066 BAC. So she was under the 0.08 limit, but still had a significant amount of alcohol in her system. Mario Cortez, the one who got 40 years in prison, blood alcohol content of 0.202. Yeah, almost 2.5 times the legal limit for alcohol. And in the case of Anna Marie Jackson, the one who pulled in front of the motorcycle officer, they don't list whether or not she had alcohol in her system. I would bet she did. And the problem about this is that these guys are searching, law enforcement here is searching for a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. These cases of people that are found to have marijuana in their system, they get in these serious wrecks. It is almost never that I see a story where that didn't also include alcohol. Now, we do know, the science does show, that impairment under alcohol is going to put you about 4 times the risk of a crash. Impairment under marijuana puts you at about the same risk of a crash as a sober person once you adjust for age and gender. The problem with the studies in the past is they've said, oh, marijuana is going to be twice as likely to get you in a car wreck. They didn't account for the fact that most of the people they find in these car wrecks and most of the people that use marijuana are young men between the ages of 18 and 25. And guess who are the worst drivers on the planet? Young men between 18 and 25. So the disproportionate nature that more people smoke pot when they're young, more people smoke pot if they're male, and young male drivers are lousy drivers anyway, skewed those statistics to make it sound like marijuana drivers are twice as likely to get in a wreck. It's not true. Marijuana drivers, just as likely to get in a wreck as sober drivers. Alcohol drivers, 4 times as likely to get in a wreck. But you combine pot and marijuana, 13 times more likely to get in a wreck. Pot and alcohol together have a synergistic effect as far as the pot increases the impairment from the alcohol, and the alcohol decreases the judgment that you'd normally have with the marijuana. So yeah, if you're going to show me a bunch of stories where people got into wrecks and hurt and killed people, but they were also using alcohol, you're not convincing me of anything. And the other thing that's frustrating about this is, have we ever had a big rash of marijuana-related wrecks on the road? Can anyone recall the big hue and cry over, oh my God, all these stone people are killing people on the roads? Again, when you do hear one of these, it's someone who also had alcohol in their system. So very rarely is it just marijuana. So they're trying to solve a problem that isn't even out there to be solved. Let's treat marijuana like we treat Vicodin. Let's treat marijuana like we treat fentanyl. There's no per se DUID for fentanyl metabolites in your system. There shouldn't be one for marijuana. All right, we got to take another break. And when we come back, we'll wrap up the show with yet another story of people getting sickened by edibles. Be right back after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
As a freshman member of the Oregon legislature, I was able to vote as my state was the first to decriminalize.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Yeah.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody, and I wonder if you were watching the college basketball national championship yesterday. I did. I was rooting for Gonzaga. I wanted to see the Zags win. It's like North Carolina needs another championship. Come on now. But once again, North Carolina wins in a sloppy fashion when basically they won by rebounding. Just like they did against, who were they playing before? Oregon, yeah. Just basically out-rebounded them. So congratulations, North Carolina. All right, last weed story for the day. This coming out of the Charlotte Observer, Charlotte, South Carolina, where hospital workers in Statesville are sickened after eating marijuana-laced cookies and muffins. Basically, six people at the Davis Regional Medical Center were sickened after eating cookies and muffins laced with marijuana. Neither the workers nor the employee who took the cookies to the hospital on Sunday had any idea they had marijuana baked into them. A family member of the employee had made the baked goods using cannabis oil. The cookies and muffins were not intended for the hospital staff. The employee who brought the baked goods to the hospital will face no charges. Interesting about that. The thing I love the headline when they say they were sickened by the marijuana goodies. I don't know. Sickened is not the right word. Over-ingested or intoxicated by or something, but it's not like they were puking, okay? They were... Anyway, regardless of how we characterize this, it's yet another one of these stories that kicks in the fear mechanism and reinforces the rhetoric of people like Kevin Sabet and Project Zan. And it's just a simple mistake, but I would encourage people who are listening to this, if you're the kind of folks that like to make your marijuana edibles, don't ever package them without labeling them. Don't just assume you can make a bunch of tasty cookies and brownies and not think someone's going to kipe some of them. You need to have a piece of paper on that, a post-it note, something that tells people, warning, medicated, infused, contains marijuana, contains THC, whatever else you got to put on it, you got to do it. Every one of these stories that hits in the mainstream, especially when it's hitting in a conservative state like this, makes it just that much harder for us to pass the next marijuana reform. So please be responsible out there when you're making these goodies. Don't assume that everybody in your house knows what they are. Don't assume that nobody in your house is going to grab them or take them with them somewhere. Seems like every week I get a story like this. Every week I get a story of some kids at a school or some people at a workplace that get sickened because somebody unknowingly ingests the marijuana edibles. It's interesting. I just got a press release from the folks out at Magical Butter. You remember them? The Magical Butter company makes that extraction machine for, you know, cannabis oils and such to be able to make, you know, butter, infused butter. Well, they've come out with this new product. It's called 21 Up. And what it is a series of molds, not like the mold you get on your bread, but like a mold, like a plastic injection type of mold, right? For marijuana infused items. Think of it like, you know, when you get those little cookie cutters, you know, like the Santa cookie or the Christmas tree cookie, and you just press it into the dough. Well, it's like that, except when you press this into the dough, it writes the word 21 up. 21UP on the cookie or the brownie or whatever else, so people know that this is for people 21 and up, that it is an infused product. I think that's a great idea, and you don't even have to go with the their product with those molds. I mean, one of the things about legalization that's always vexed me here is we get to this point about edibles and packaging, and the legislature say, all right, we got to have some sort of symbol, we got to have some sort of warning. We need to have something that readily identifies this product as containing marijuana. It needs to be something that illiterate people would be able to understand. It needs to be something people who speak foreign languages, don't read English, would be able to understand. It needs to be something that even a child could understand means that this product contains marijuana. If only we had a symbol of some sort, an icon, if you will, some sort of graphic that when people see it, immediately brings to mind the idea, the concept of marijuana. If only there were some sort of shape or design or outline that everybody in the world from age 10 to 100 in every language on the planet, some symbol that represented marijuana that would show people that these things have pot in them. Gosh, if only we could think of such a thing, if there were only a readily identifiable symbol for marijuana. Well, since they couldn't think of any, they come up with THC with an exclamation point or 21 up or anything like that, because God forbid they put the pot leaf on it, the most readily identifiable symbol. No, we can't put a pot leaf on it because that would encourage marijuana use. On a package of marijuana that people are already buying? Again, bigotry, cultural ignorance, and fear are behind not using the pot leaf as the symbol. That's all the time we got, folks. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes downstairs.
You're listening to The Russ Belville Show.
As someone who is a social worker, I think we really must look at the way we're handling marijuana in this country.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Coming on Monday, May 1st, 2017, a new daily podcast dedicated to the expanding world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Featuring leaders and experts from the worlds of activism, business, research, and entertainment. It's the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, premiering May 1st on MJAgenda.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.